We've been trained to be productive. We've been trained to trade, time for money and achievement for self-worth. Carving out space for something that is purely pleasurable is, there's so much resistance to it.
Hey, welcome to the Bodies Built Better podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Tan, and I'm so grateful you're with me today. This show is all about human performance, the holistic approach to performing at your best. I'm so passionate about looking at all the different ways that help you get a better understanding of who you are, what makes you you, and how actually you can perform at your best to your truest and most authentic self as well. And what is more exciting and satisfying and gratifying than doing your absolute best and feeling like your best? And sometimes that is harder to do, or some days it's harder. We are human and we all need hope and inspiration to fuel us and to fuel where we want to be going. And that's really hard to do if sometimes we're not feeling like ourselves, or we're not able to receive the inspiration or seek the inspiration that we need. Cue in my next guest, the incredible Caitlin Cady, a meditation teacher, writer, author, and all-round incredible human being. We chat about her new book, The Hope Dealer, which talks about all of those things. The Hope Dealer is 101 messages that will help you tune into yourself and plug in to your full potential. And if there's one thing this podcast is all about, it is about exploring and identifying your extraordinary potential. In this episode, we talk about inspiration, where it can come from, how to let it fuel your fire and take you on a journey of self-discovery. We talk about joy and the pleasures of finding those things that light you up. And we also talk about if you've lost that joy in your life, that playfulness, those things that make you happy that you can just do and enjoy and it not have to mean anything or be productive in any way. We talk about those things and how to find those beautiful magic moments for you and for the people around you as well. We also talk about trust, releasing the need to control and trusting in yourself, in those around you, and that what will be specially for you and for your highest good. And sometimes even that is hard to trust. Caitlin is my people. She has this beautiful way of communicating these messages in a way that's so thoughtful and really resonates with me especially, but I know this is going to hit home for you as well. So let's dive into this amazing episode with the gorgeous Caitlin Cady. Caitlin, thank you so much for chatting with me today. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, my friend. It's good to be back.
Oh, it's so good to have you. We're talking about your incredible new book, The Hope Dealer. And I was hoping that we could start with you reading the introduction.
Certainly.
Because I feel that's really special and really important in terms of finding inspiration, finding hope, and understanding the place that has within us and around us. And I'd just love you to start there.
That's so beautiful. I would love to. Okay, settle in, everyone. It's story time. Okay. So, introduction. I believe inspiration has the power to change us. It can spark our imagination, stir the creative forces within us, and spur us into action, thereby altering the course of our lives. Inspiration is what motivates us to create, be it art, food, music, poetry, or change within ourselves or the world around us. Inspiration sustains us, excites us, and empowers us to think, feel, and act in new ways. It helps us to see things differently, to open our imagination to new possibilities. When we open ourselves to new possibilities, we reconnect with a sense of hope. Hope is, after all, a form of inspiration, and a potent one at that. Hope has the dual role of not only inspiring us, but also inviting us to trust. Our highest hopes are always rooted in a longing for positive change and the belief that change is possible. In fact, the word hope itself is imbued with a sense of trust and confidence. One of its origins is the old English word hopa, meaning confidence in the future. It is my own hope that this book inspires you and gives you confidence in the future. The pages that follow are full of perspectives, prompts, and questions that invite you to relate to things like rejection, sorrow, stuckness, self-doubt, emptiness, vulnerability, and grief in new, empowering, and hopeful ways. My intention is that these words inspire you to set fire to limiting beliefs, reframe resistance and rejection, and say sayonara to self-doubt and perfectionism while building intuition, resilience, courage, and compassion. The messages are intended to help you reconnect with a sense of positivity and self-trust so that you can tune into your highest, most hopeful self every single day, no matter what comes your way. Do you want me to continue or should I pause there?
I pause there because that is so incredibly beautiful and it touches on everything that I want to talk about today. That is hope, that is trust, that is reframing.
Yeah.
And inspiration for me has taken me on so many journeys, be it not that I like labeling things, but whether we could say good or bad. But it has all come from inspiration, and I love this book so, so much. And I would love to start with your inspiration for writing such a beautiful piece of work.
Well, thank you for saying that. That is makes my day to hear it. And it's so interesting. The way that this book kind of came about, and even just the feeling of putting it out in the world. I guess the place to begin would be to talk about writing itself and what that means to me, because before I had anyone to write for, I wrote for myself, because writing for me has always been a form of alchemy. It's always been this opportunity to process and digest life experiences and then transform them into something beautiful and hopefully something useful. And so it's always been this sort of intuitive practice of trying to articulate the positive lessons offered by every experience, no matter how challenging. So I think that, you know, the tone of all of these writings is really around optimism. And I think that that sense of optimism and that sense of hope come from a willingness to find the silver linings, right? A willingness to take the bitter and turn it into something sweet and something meaningful and something nourishing for the path ahead. And so that's why I write in the first place, is as an act of alchemy, as a way of learning about life, about a way of finding meaning in life, a way to understand, and then to try and embody the lessons that life has offered. But it's not just sort of like making field notes, right? So when we share our writing, it makes an offering out of what we learn along the way. And so I began to share my writing with this humble hope that my words might make somebody else's experience a little bit easier or a little more inspired or a little more empowered. And often what I write about is my own experience, but I do write a lot about, things that I witness in the world or themes that I notice in people around me and things that they might be struggling with. And it's really such a privilege to be able to share it. And so how I began to share it was I had a blog, and then my husband and a couple of friends and I started a street magazine, as you do, here in Byron Bay. This was I can't even remember how many years ago it was, but we started this street mag in Byron Bay, and it was like a black and white print mag that came out every week, and it was super fun. We had all of these cool, columns. We had like gig guides and that kind of thing, so that you could kind of pick it up and instantly like understand what was happening in town, where you could eat, where you could see, DJs or music or what was happening. But we also had like a book review column written by my coworker at that time, who's now the owner of Open Book, which is an amazing bookstore in Perth. So she wrote a book review, and we had tarot scopes, which were like your horoscopes, but a tarot card drawn for each sign and that kind of thing. So we had all this fun content, and one of the gals that was working with us was like, "Caitlin, why don't we take your blog posts and your Instagram posts, and like, why don't you make a call? Why don't you have a column?" It had literally never occurred to me. Like, that's the funny part is like, here I was a writer, and it never occurred to me to like actually share my work. And so I said, okay, yeah, let's do it. And the reason that I'm mentioning that is because it became this weekly series. And the theme really started to emerge because when you're showing up and you're writing something every week, you start to sort of notice like, oh, there's themes here, right? And so that was important. But what was more important was that readers like came up and talked to me in the grocery store about it. And they would say, oh, this you have no idea how much I needed this week's message, or that just really hit home for me. And I would have friends going to other people's houses and seeing that they'd clipped out the column and put it on their fridge, or that they had all of the columns on their fridge, or that it was on somebody's bathroom mirror. And it was so important for me to be able to A, interact with my community in that way, but B, to see the way that like having something tangible to hold on to, and that sense of divine timing of like that message landed for me at the right time, how important those two things are. And so that was really the inspiration behind creating this book, which was many years ago. But that was the origin story, was this like, I wanted to create this interactive tool where you could still have a sense of receiving that right message at the right time, and to package them together so that it was a collection of writings that were all around these themes that I just mentioned earlier when I read the introduction. So it's super gratifying and exciting to see it like all together in a book now. But I have to tell you that like there were a few moments where I was like, no one will read this. Like, why this is, you're editing it, you're reading it, and you're going, this is shit. And I tell you that because I think there's often this like overconfidence that's sort of like promoted by people like me. And I have no bones about sharing the fact that self-doubt is just a byproduct of living a creative life, and it's part of the process, and it's part of that. It's learning to dance with it, right? And that voice gets smaller and smaller and smaller and quieter and less dominant. But even people, even published authors, right? I'm a second-time published author, but I'm still dancing with that resistance and that self-doubt and that little voice, and I'm overriding it. And I just want to share that because that's one of the big themes that I talk about in the book. And that's why it's so important to me to talk about those things, is because everyone is feeling that way. It's not just you, right? It's not just us. I think we get caught into that space of like, I'm the only person that doubts whether this is good enough to share.
So when that came up for you, How did you get past it?
Well, it's a practice, right? Like everything in life. But I think that I'm emotionally really courageous, I would say. Like I'm quite willing to like put it all out there and bare my soul. But what was a turning point for me was actually when I lost my little brother 4 years ago. He died suddenly, and I think that that really brought a lot of things into focus for me. And one of them was, I don't want to live a small life. I want to live a brave, big life, right? And I'm not going to waste my energy on self-doubt because I believe that I'm here to help. And if this book or whatever project I'm working on at the moment could be of service to one person or 10 people or 100 people, that's enough. Like that's enough of a reason to put it out there. So that's one piece of it. The other piece of it is, I don't take credit for any of this, right? Like none of this is actually mine. To me, all creativity is just sort of like a download from the divine, right? And I'm not saying that like as if I have some kind of access to the divine that other people don't. Like I don't have the divine's 1-800 number, but I think we all have that is what we all have. We all have gifts. We all have the ability to sort of deliver something, right, into the world. And if I believe that, which I do, that these are gifts that are on loan to me from the divine for this lifetime, maybe for more lifetimes, I don't know, then who am I not to share them? Because it's not mine. So it's none of my business, right? So it's sort of like that. It is not mine in the first place. It's removing the sort of ego out of it. And that's really freeing. So I think those are the two sort of perspectives of like, I want to be courageous because I want to live a big, brave life. And these aren't my, what I'm sharing isn't mine anyway. It's just sort of an offering and I'm a conduit for it. So let me get out of the way.
Oh, get out of the way, ego. Beautiful lesson. And I really love your story because it, the writing piece, I mean, you followed joy, right? I mean, that's what it was. And that's what has ultimately led you to this path. And so following that joy, how do we get back there? Because I feel like, especially these last few years where things get a bit tough, and so we feel like we have to knuckle down and just get things done, get on with it, and we kind of lose a sense of what brings us joy and all those little things that are really important to be able to do and move ourselves away from that, I guess, that hustle. How do we get back to experiencing joy?
Like, joy is such a juicy topic. And I think that there's like a variety of pathways into joy, but I would say some of the most important sort of principles are that can help us find our way into more joy is, oh my gosh, like we could record a whole series on this, but
I'm down if you're down.
yes, let's do it. Jackie and I have never met a mic we don't like. So we'll be back for 10 more episodes. So, okay, the first thing is pleasure, right? And so we have this sort of to access pleasure, typically what stands in the way of it is an obsession with productivity, right? And so all of the things that actually bring us deep, meaningful pleasure, it doesn't mean that they're like, big fancy things or that they take lots of time. It's just that they are satisfying. They usually don't have an outcome, a tangible outcome. And that's really uncomfortable for us because we've been trained to be productive. We've been trained to trade, time for money and achievement for self-worth. And so for a lot of us, just even carving out space for something that is purely pleasurable is there's so much resistance to it. And so I think the first thing we have to do is name that and go, all right, like that's not my fault. That's sort of something that all of us are dealing with because it's a cultural sort of dilemma, right? So we have to name that. And then from there, it's like, okay, well, how can I actually build pleasure into my day? Because I think pleasure is a pathway to joy. I don't know if I sort of said that, but pleasure is a pathway to joy. So how do we build space for that in our lives? And I think that even just like carving out, you know, a pocket of time in your day to do something that is completely unproductive and completely pleasurable is, it's a revolution, right? Like it's an act of rebellion against all of those forces that are trying to keep you, that are benefiting from you, your attention being poured into productivity. So I think that's one pathway in. I think curiosity is another pathway to joy. So that is sort of the same as pleasure. It's like just following, you don't know where it's going to end up. So you don't know if it's going to be productive, right? And it's just sort of like letting that tail of curiosity lead you down a path. And I know that curiosity is something that you really treasure and prize in your life, Jackie. And I think that it's such an important principle. And the people who like I look around at who are, you know, in the later stages of life that I'm like, they are super amazing and inspiring. It's they're curious to the last day. You know, they're open to the last day. I've been emailing with an 89-year-old who's learning to meditate, and she borrowed my first book, Happily Meditate, from the library. I am so inspired by her because she's 89 and she's like, I'm gonna learn to do this now. And so I think that, yeah, you look around at the people who are like still very much alive and awake in life, and they haven't sort of folded in on themselves, and they're curious and they're open. So I think that's another, pathway towards joy. I think the other thing is like playfulness. So undervalued, hey?
Oh, massively.
So something like an example of playfulness is like literally playing. Like, so my mom's just arrived from the States to be with us for the holidays. And I'm so excited for so many reasons. But one of the things I love is that like, she's really into playing games. And so she's brought this like dominoes game with her, and she's taught me to play, and now all the two older kids can play. And so last night, my mom, my husband, and the three kids and I were all sitting around a games table that we have. We have an official games table.
Amazing.
And we played this game together, and it's like, it's pointless, right? Like it's not productive. Like, you know, yes, we do keep score because we're competitive, but it's pointless. But it is such a satisfying, joyful way to spend time, right? So it's like, again, another example of how all of those concepts kind of, I guess, weave together. But yeah, I mean, I just don't think that pleasure is valued enough, and that playfulness, that curiosity, all of those things are so undervalued in our culture.
How hilarious is it that your mum bought a dominoes game, and yet, I don't know if this is a pun, but I'm going to use it, the domino effect on everyone and the joy that that spreads with everyone. It's just, how beautiful is that?
It's so fun. And do you know what I love is that, so she learned to play it. She lives in a building, like a condo building in St. Louis. And in the States, and she has this great group of friends in her building, and these gals get together every week and play this game together, and they range from, you know, 96 years old all the way down to, you know, I think the youngest gal that plays with them is like maybe in her late 30s, early 40s. So it's all these different women at different stages of life sitting down to play a game. And so she learned it from them and then she's brought it here. But I have to tell you, I just love all of that. But I have to tell you that she brought it down and she opens, like, first of all, she's like Mary Poppins. Okay. So like she unpacks a suitcase and you're like, she like literally had like a backgammon board that was needle pointed by my grandmother in there. And then she's like, oh, and here are like 12 silver goblets. I thought we could serve ice cream out of them. Like she literally just like pulls all, my husband's like, where is like how who fits this in their
Who let
luggage?
you into the country?
Yeah, that also. But anyway, so she pulls this like this dominoes game out, and it is this like metal briefcase. It's like about yay big, and it's this metal briefcase. It looks like a briefcase that you carry cash in. And I'm like, what is that? Like, are you a member of the cartel now? And she's like, it's the new dominoes set that I brought down. So
Sure what
it's,
this is?
yeah. I'm like, what are you just like got? My husband calls $100 bills, mustard. He's like, you just got like mustards like stacked in there. Like, what's in
Yeah, what's
there?
under that lining?
Exactly. I'm gonna unpick it and see if it's really just felt. So yeah, anyway, I digress. But yeah, it's that beautiful, that like spirit of playfulness. And it's no, it's not productive, but it's sitting together, you're fully present, you're playing. So there's no real outcome that means anything, right? So I think that's another beautiful path in. And I'll just say one more thing on that note of pleasure, which is just that I think that we often have been taught that like pain is our only teacher. And I write about this in the book, is this idea that, no pain, no gain. And everything that sort of strengthens us in life comes through hardship. I think that is true. That pain is a teacher and that challenges are opportunities to evolve in very profound ways. But I think that pleasure is overlooked as a portal into deepened presence, a deepened sense of peace and satisfaction and self-understanding. And that matters too.
Absolutely. I feel like joy is our compass.
Well said.
Let's talk about how we can then incorporate that into our lives. If we're feeling like we need a bit of that joy, we need something, how can we build a new habit or even, I mean, there's so much talk around habits as well, and that can, you could, eye roll, which is fair. But how can we look at it in a way, or reframe it as this exploration of finding joy, making new habits that are sustainable and can include everyone around us as well?
Yeah, I do think it's contagious, isn't it? Well, I think yeah, I feel you on the habits thing and the sort of like hat like life hacks. It's like it's I think we're all feeling a bit weary of that. Like I'm not trying to like self-optimize. It's like I just want to be happy and peaceful
Exactly.
and free, right? Like
Yeah.
I don't need to be superhuman.
Mm.
That being said, I think that what can be helpful is so most of us are very good at like structuring our time because we've been well trained to sort of measure our outputs and measure our time and block out, time for this and that. So I think that you can kind of leverage that and that ability and that skill as literally creating these sort of pockets of pleasure in your life. So you could literally make a date on your calendar for it and set a reminder, and even if it's only 15 minutes a day, or twice a day for 15 minutes, that's enough to start to build it into your day and let it become a practice, that you and a touchstone for your day. And then I think what you find is that you reach for it more and more. But I think initially it is important to just go, like, if you just wait for the opportunity for pleasure to strike, like, it will never happen, right? Because we are very good at filling our time and our space with more and more and more and more and more. And if we're left with just something, an empty pocket of time, then we're going to go like organize our sock drawer or clean out the kitchen cupboard or do some other productive activity that might feel really good, but it's not pleasure. So I think you do have to be sort of like disciplined about creating space for it in your life initially. And then it becomes the thing that you reach for intuitively, right? It'll become part of your rhythm. Do you think that helps? I don't know. I don't know
Yeah,
if
I
that's a
love,
good
well, I
question.
mean, that resonates with me because that pocket of pleasure, I can share mine, is making dinner. I always crank up the music and I'm dancing around whilst I'm cooking. And it's hilarious because my poor husband is still kind of working at that time. I just like really have to manage how high that music is. But that for me is just so freeing and playful, and it really just helps with, my spirits and enjoying that moment.
Yeah, we call that in our house an RKDP, random kitchen dance party.
Love it. With
So,
all of you around?
oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Brilliant. Oh, so
It's a
good.
vibe. It's a vibe. We should share our playlists, Jackie.
Oh, definitely.
Love to hear yours.
You know I've got more than a few.
I know you do. Well, do you know what jumped out to me about what you were sharing too is that like you've intuitively created that space, right? That event or that ritual. But what's really neat is the way that it's placed in your day is like that's your transition from work to home.
Yeah.
And what's so wise about what you've done is that you've like built in like a physical aspect of like sort of shaking off the day, right? This sort of somatic release that's happening, you getting the endorphins going and all of that, right?
Yeah.
And this sensory experience of the music, the sensory experience of the food, and that you're creating this meal for you and your husband, and this act of that is like such an act of self-care, right? Is like preparing food for yourself or for your loved ones. And so it's this like lovely ritual that you've created that helps you transition out of the doing and into the being. And it's lovely. Like I love that that's how you're punctuating the day, because I think that transitioning, being able to transition into different energy is another really important skill that we need to be able to weave in more pleasure. If we don't create those conscious transitions, then our day just becomes like a jumbled blur of hot mess.
Yeah. And I hadn't even thought of that. And how important is it? Yeah, that transition. And there's so many times where I've not done that and noticed the difference. And I even go to bed, not even in a very good mood or in a good state. And it's the same for, my family, when I'm around them in that evening time where it is meant to be downtime, our time, and really present. And there's none of that because our minds are still on the day's work.
So transitions are like portals, right? And we talk about a lot about transitions with like meditation and yoga practice and some of these things that I know the breath, like Jackie, you know all about that. But paying attention to, so like let's take the breath for an example. If there are like involuntary pauses in the breath, so like holding the breath, which we've talked about, Jackie in the Breathe Well course that you did with me, but those, like, for example, email apnea, where people hold their breath looking at their phones or looking at their email. So this is a thing. If you're listening, just observe yourself today when you're looking at your email, and notice if you are holding your breath at some point while you're in your inbox, because this is a documented thing. Okay, so when you have those involuntary pauses, those are damaging, right? And then, but when we pay attention to it, creating a seamless, what I mean by damaging is, like, they're not great for your nervous system and they're not great for your physical body. But when we can smooth out the breath and look at those transitions of smoothing out the transition from inhale to exhale and the transition from exhale to inhale and create this sweeping sort of flowing breath, it shifts our nervous system, right? And what we're doing is bringing attention to creating a graceful transition with our breath. And that has an onflow effect in our bodies, in our nervous system, in our mind. And what I love is that that really brought my attention to the mirror of that in our lives, like, which is graceful transitions. How can I eliminate these involuntary pauses in my day? These, and what I mean by that is, like, those moments when you fall apart, right? The moments when you hit the wall energetically, like you're exhausted, you're burnt out, you get sick, whatever. It's because you weren't gracefully transitioning, probably. Like, you weren't transitioning out of doing and into being enough, or with enough consistency or enough grace or enough self-care, right? So then you're overriding those cycles and interrupting the natural flow. Is this, am I, are you picking up what I'm putting down?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. So I just think that when you start to pay attention to those transitions, whether they are in your breath or in your mind, right? Looking at, like, the movement of the thoughts and the spaces between the thoughts. And then we start going into life and going, where can I create these graceful transitions? So a graceful transition from sleeping, like that waking transition, is a morning ritual, right? And that doesn't need to be sort of overwrought, right? A morning ritual, people think, oh, I don't have that much time for a morning ritual. It doesn't need to be something that's serious and overwrought. It can be just a conscious, graceful transition. And then, you know, what you've done at the end of your day, that's a graceful transition. That's a conscious transition out of one, from one aspect of breath, the inhale, to the exhale at the end of the day. So it can be this really beautiful metaphor of looking at the energy in our lives and looking at the energy in our bodies and creating more flow for ourselves by paying attention to those transition points.
Absolutely. So powerful. And even as you say that, there are so many moments in my days that I think back on now and go, ooh, I could have done that better. And
yeah.
So, yeah.
What's one that comes to mind? I'm curious.
Well, in terms of massage, working with a lot of people, I kind of pick up on a lot of other people's energy, you know, and it's so intense. Sometimes it can give me the shakes.
Okay. Yep.
So when I'm then moving out of that space, you know, I just clean the room, lock up, get in the car, go home, eat something, pour myself a cup of tea, then go to bed. You know what I mean? There's no time for that transition and almost to shake that energy off.
Yeah.
Because it's not mine. And it's almost like you need to cleanse yourself of that as well in order to come back into you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's certainly one
I love that
I need to work
yeah.
on.
Two others that come to mind for me are, like, eating, like lunch. So an example of, like, a very small one would be to not eat in front of your computer, right? But to actually sit down with your food and take three deep diaphragmatic breaths, wiggle your toes, and just land before you eat. Why does that matter? Well, because you're creating that transition, not only for yourself mentally, where you're actually going, okay, and now in this little moment. I'm nourishing myself, I'm eating, right? But it also impacts your digestion. So I think that, like, when I say though, digestion, like, that's another juicy metaphor, right? It's like, it's not just about like you digesting your food. It's also like this pause in the middle of the day where you can reset and digest what has happened, right? And go, okay, let me give my attention to that. In the yoga tradition and in Ayurveda, it's called Agni. It's that digestive fire. So how can I like fuel that fire and digest not just my food well, but also my experiences to this point? And anytime also that we can create that conscious pause that interrupts momentum. Interrupting momentum is like my jam right now, by the way. So if you like hearing me talk elsewhere or like spending time with me, you're going to hear me saying it's all about interrupting the momentum. Because that's how we get out of like what you were just describing, where you're just carrying forward this energy that isn't even yours, right? Or you're just getting caught up in the momentum of like this time of year. So currently, it's the lead up to Christmas, and it's like I just look around, and everybody's just like buzzing around. And like,
Exactly.
let's just pack everything in. And I think to give yourself the permission of just like, it's okay to slow down when the world's speeding up, right? So another way you could do that in a practical way, because I love the practical things, is like lay down at 3 o'clock when you hit the wall and you're reaching for that coffee or that bar of chocolate, if you're anything like me. Lay down and rest for 15 minutes. So do a yoga nidra practice, or just lay down and have a nap in the sun, whatever, but just lay down when your energy is low and you're feeling tired. Honor that. Let that be a moment of transition. And then when you come back up, you've interrupted the momentum of the day and you have a clearer perspective about what really matters, what really needs to get done, and you've tuned back into your own energy.
Yeah, you're brought back down to earth. I mean, that's what it reminds me of, that groundedness and coming back to.
That's the paradox, I think, of yoga nidra, is that it like connects you with a wild level of expansiveness and spaciousness and that remembrance of your expansive nature. And yet it's inc the result when you come back is that you feel deeply grounded
Yeah.
and centered.
We're going to bring it back to the book. The thing I love about The Hope Dealer is that whilst there is these beautiful affirmations and it gives you the tools, the practical tools to understand how to use it and where to go, it can also be a little bit confronting. It's a nice little reminder of life's pleasures and the things we may want to skip over. And one of those things, just trust. I find trust is, it can be elusive, it can be scary, because when we trust in ourselves or in others, or in the universe or higher power, however you want to say that, you really are. I'm not sure if I could say, you could say giving up control, but it's that sense of just letting what will be be. So my question to you is, for those out there who feel like they've been a bit battered by life, by maybe it's people, maybe it's work, maybe it's family, maybe it's themselves. How do we get back on the path of trust and trusting in ourselves?
Yes, I will say that it is hard. It is hard. So to begin, I would offer that the alternative to not trusting sucks more. and trusting, but very poetically. But like, yes, it does make you feel vulnerable, and it invites you to recognize that you are not in control of everything in your life, right? But on the flip side of that, it grants you with the remembrance that you are in control of some things, right? And one of those things is your perspective. So it's kind of interesting because on the one hand, like trusting makes you feel like there, like I have no control. Like that's the first kind of the first take at it, right? I have no control. So, but I think what's deeper in there is actually this sense, reclaiming a sense of agency. So let me trust in the part of life that I have no control over, and let me remember the power that I have in each moment and the agency that I have in each experience. It's the coupling of those two things. And so when I say just trust, I'm saying, if you go into fear about everything, then that's just a rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. Like that is just a very unpleasant place to be. And the alternative to that is to trust in what's happening and trust that it will, that is the alternative to just being in a state of fear all the time. Right. And what I mean by that does not like, it's not like everything's going to work out. Everything's
Yeah.
It's not that. It's not the toxic positivity. It's this like, I trust that whatever happens, like it's going to be okay or it's not, because I'm going to be okay. Like I'm going to be okay. You know, it's like, and this is not theoretical for me, by the way. I'm speaking from very fresh experience around this of being, when you're being confronted with something and going, I feel powerless. I feel out of control, about something that's feels beyond my control. Right. But it's a practice in going, okay, where is my agency in this experience? Like, what can I take responsibility for? How can I work with this experience that's challenging? And I will not waste my mental energy on stress and fear if I can avoid it. I will choose to trust in my ability to move through life. I don't know if I'm really explaining that very succinctly, but it's a self-trust.
Yeah.
It's just
showing up for you.
Yeah. And it's a trust in the fact that, like, if you look back on your life and you go, look at what I've come through, and that reflection on how resilient you have been, how strong you have been, how graceful you have been, and how brave you have been. When you take that moment to look back on your life so far, I think that you'll find that there's a lot of reason to trust yourself. Right?
Absolutely.
But it's a practice. And I think that's the most important thing to remember, is that even for me, someone who just like deeply believes in that, it is a practice every day that I have to go, ah, let me replace that thought. Let me consciously choose something that is more nourishing, more product, like more, not productive, but more positive. And that's going to orient me and align me with something positive.
It's making that choice, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Who you are is an evolution. I really love this because it speaks to me now where I currently am in life. So if you could,
yeah,
would you mind reading this for us?
Yeah, I would love to.
Page 51.
Oh, thank you.
And then I would really love for you to explain where you were at and what you were feeling when you wrote this.
Okay. Who you are is an evolution. You are not bound by contract, fate, inheritance, or destiny to live as a fixed version of yourself. You are free. Free to change, free to shed your skin, free to walk through a new doorway, free to evolve. You are pure potential. You are limitless. All you need is willingness. In every moment that you are prepared to step outside of who you think you're supposed to be, you step into your true becoming. You step closer to your true self and you activate your full potential. Notice any molds, roles, expectations, obligations, old stories, or beliefs that lock you into a fixed state of being. That is not you. That is an expired, outdated idea of you. Who you are is an evolution. Be willing to give up who you are, who you think you need to be, what someone told you to be, or who you used to be, so that you can expand into the limitless potential of your true nature. Join the evolution revolution. Be willing to become you over and over again. There's so much to say about that. I think that there's a few. Okay, so let me try and organize my thoughts. The first thing is that life is a practice, right? It's not about reaching some fixed state. It's because that's a perfectionistic approach, right? How can I extract my highest self? That's not what we're doing. It's a practice over and over and over again. And just like when we're practicing meditation, we're bringing our attention back to the focal point over and over and over again. Life is a practice. So all of these things that happen to us are offering themselves to us as opportunities for transformation. So I think that that's something that really is at the forefront for me, is just that, this isn't about some reaching some finish line. I mean, the finish line for this life is death, right? But beyond that, it's like, I want to come back to this 89-year-old who borrowed my first book from the library and learned to meditate at 89. Be like Peggy. Okay? Like, let's all be like Peggy. Like, let's keep being curious and keep evolving and keep recognizing that it's this practice of becoming ourselves more and more and more. And I also think that that just like leads into this point of who you are is limitless. And that's something that, if you've practiced meditation regularly, then you've probably touched that place. You've probably, maybe you just dipped your toe in, maybe you went for a full-on, deep dive, but you've touched into this sense of wholeness, worthiness, limitlessness, this sense that you are a drop in the divine of, you are a drop in the ocean divine. And when you come from that place and that remembrance of that inherent wholeness and that inherent connection that you have to the entire universe around you, then it's really just a process of shedding, right? It's just a process of like releasing the layers. And that's what I mean by this evolution and this sort of shape shifting, is that there's always some other, our work here is to shed those layers, to resolve the mental patternings or the emotional patternings, the blockages in our thinking, in our energy bodies, like all of that. That's what we're doing. We're alchemizing that. That's why we're here, I think, to do that, to do that with as much grace and skill as we can, right? And with as much consciousness as we can. And I think that Yeah, I just think it's this, the last piece I'll say is just that a lot of us have been told about like who we are, whether it was by our families or teachers in school or, other like friends, or we've been told a lot about ourselves. And we've had a lot of experiences, but it's always up to us to decide whether that's true or helpful, And if it's not, then drop it. Drop it. Because anything, and even just this ego, like I mentioned in the beginning of like, oh, well, what I have to share is shit. Like that's an identification with, some part of myself that was like, oh, well, the work isn't good enough, or you're not that, whatever, let it go. Be brave. Be brave. I don't know if that really explains it, because I feel like there's so much in that short little passage, but
Yeah.
I think it's just about remembering that all of these sort of like little beliefs that we pick up along the way about ourselves are, we can put them down just as readily as we picked them up, and it takes practice.
Absolutely. And I have to say, in terms of why that resonates so much with me is I do feel like I'm going through an evolution of who I am and all of the labels that I've placed on myself and feeling like I can't let those go because then who am I? And so being in a place where I sit with that and understand my path forward is a scary place to be, but I'm trusting.
Well, trust in yourself, because you are worthy of your trust, Jackie. Just like, it's interesting though, you said, it's like the labels, right? And I think about that even in terms of like our careers. It's like, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a certified blah blah. Like, what if we just like dropped all of that, right? Like, it's a shorthand, right? And it has a place in the world, because it helps us sort of identify, like, or help people identify what we have to offer them. But it brings to mind, Dallas Clayton. I don't know if you know him. He's an illustrator and he writes children's books. You should follow his Instagram account for, if you like kind of cool cartoons. But there's this drawing that he did, and it was, I can't even really remember the drawing. It's on my Instagram from like way back in the day, but it was, I think it was something like, aspiring beam of light. Like that was the label. I'm an aspiring beam of light. And I was like, that's me. I'm an aspiring beam of light. Like, you just hit the nail on the head. So it's like, if you just could like drop all of the other labels, right? And just go, I'm just actually, because that is, I mean, and that's really to the point of what I was like speaking to in that who you are as an evolution. It's like, we're all just actually like made of stardust. And we're all just trying to return to that essence of self-luminosity and that connection to the divine light and to the cosmos. And like, that's what we're all doing. So we are all actually like writer, meditation teacher, massage therapist, aspiring beam of light. Like, put that on the business card, and then it sort of just covers all the bases, right?
Exactly. Either that or it's a really great conversation starter, right?
Well, there you go. Like, everybody's gonna ask what that means. Tell me more. Like, put that on your LinkedIn profile. I'm sure you'll get a lot of hits. But I mean, it sounds very, I know that sounds very like hashtag Byron Bay, but I do think that there's value in that, of like looking at the labels that you're living with and recognizing that they have a place, but also, are they limiting you?
Oh,
And if
yeah.
they are, then make up your own. Right. That's part of like
Absolutely.
the hope dealer. It's like, it's your job title should not just be something that you are. It's also should be something that you are and aspiring to be.
Yeah.
as a practice.
And that beautifully goes into, I mean, I don't know if you can see, but I've got like marks and all of these. It was hard not to just like put one in every page. But reframing, so what you're saying there, and reframing how we use our language, and love, elevate your words to elevate your life. And it's something that I've actually been really conscious of this year in how I use my language with myself, around my family, and with clients as well, because it's really easy to just use the same words when you're describing stuff. And it's like, but no, let's move away from language that doesn't serve. And I love what you've got here. You could say, I have to exercise this morning. Upgrade that to, I get to exercise this morning. I need to write this article today. No, I want to write this article today. And I just love the reframing of the language that we use so it is more meaningful.
Yeah, more meaningful, more empowering,
Yeah.
right? But also, you'll notice in both of those flips, there's a level of reverence built in, right? And so, if you want to have more meaning and purpose and satisfaction and connection in your life, build in more reverence, build in more ritual, right? So, and by reverence, I mean like be deeply grateful to be here.
Yeah.
Like, just be grateful to be here. And all of those things become privileges and not burdens. And if they are truly a burden, like, certainly there are things in life that we have to do that we don't want to do. But even still, those very hard things, they are a privilege, right? So even, it's like, I'll give a very personal example. My dad was diagnosed with cancer, and he died 15 days after he was diagnosed. And I was lucky enough to go get over to the States and to be there to help care for him for his last 6 days. And he was at home, which was such a privilege to have him at home and to learn from hospice nurses how to care for him. Is that something that I wanted to do? Like, no, it's not even something I thought I could do. I'm quite a squeamish person. But in doing it, in showing up and doing it, because it was the thing that was I was called to do at that moment, it was one of the greatest honors and privileges of my life. I got to do it. I'm lucky enough that I got to do that. And I know that that's quite a dramatic example, but I chose to see all of that in and amongst the sadness and the shock. I felt a deep reverence and respect and appreciation for the privilege of caring, helping to care for him in that time and helping him to transition, physically and spiritually. So I think that when we see that, we see life through this lens of everything is sacred. Everything is an opportunity for ritual and for bringing, a sense of gratitude and reverence, then the way that we see everything in life changes. Your dinner cooking, that's a ritual. I'm just glad to be here. Like, I'm a human, right? Like, I'm human. I'm moving this beautiful body that I have. I'm cooking food for myself. I'm listening to music. All of those are just these like very human experiences. So, yes, like let that be a beautiful ritual for yourself, And sometimes those rituals are joyful and sometimes they're hard. But everything can be a privilege if you frame it that way, right?
Absolutely. Firstly, thank you for sharing that.
Oh, my pleasure.
you said, you were with your dad, and you were helping him to transition over. Can I ask how you, after that, held space for you and allowed yourself to transition into the next?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. I think grief, it's actually grief has come up a lot with the interviews that I've been doing for this book, which it's so interesting. I'm so glad. I'm so glad because I think it's one of the very, it's one of the most sort of sacred experiences of being human, and yet it's one we don't really talk about that often. So thank you for mentioning it. I learned a little bit, I guess I should say, I mentioned that I lost my brother 4 years ago. And so that was really my first sort of foray into a deep grief. I'd never lost someone sort of like young or unexpectedly like that. My grandparents passed when I was really was young. I had one grandfather sort of through my into adulthood, but all of my other grandparents had passed away when I was really young. So I didn't have this such a visceral experience of what that meant. And so I think that I was probably more well prepared for this experience with my dad because I had gone through that in a really challenging, very difficult way with the loss of my brother. But the things that I've found helpful, because when you are at the sort of center of loss like that, when it's someone really close to you, I find that you're holding space for everyone in the group. And I think it's really important, A, to have a space where you can process. So if you are the space holder, de facto space holder, or if you are holding space for other people's grief, or even just sort of coordinating a lot, I think it is important to have sort of a separate space, and that might be a separate physical space, or a person that you can land with and process sort of outside of that situation. I think that's really helpful. Yoga Nidra was really helpful for me. I mean, that was it's exhausting, caring for someone at in the end days of their life. It's like having it's very I was just saying on another interview that it was very similar to birth, like and new caring for a newborn. It's this really interesting mirror of, entering the way we enter life and the way we exit life when it happens gradually like that. So it's consuming and demanding, and I knew that I needed to have those spaces to transition and to rest. So doing things like yoga nidra was very helpful for me. But honestly, Jackie, like outside of just like the processing of the emotions and everything, the best thing for me was feeling that I was of service to my dad, and that included in the days after he passed. And it was the same for my brother. So I, and anyone could do this is just, I had a very specific ritual that I was doing that was given to me by one of my teachers. But anyone can do this, a form of it, which is, just basically getting still and getting quiet and meditating if you meditate and sending them off with gratitude and with love and setting them free. That's probably the simplest way to say it, but like letting their soul offering your blessing as they make their transition. And that, even though it's not wasn't directly caring for myself, I think that being of service, feeling that, I hope in some small way that that was of service to my dad and to my brother, because it felt really good to me in a situation where you go, I'm powerless, I'm out of control. I'm trusting that I can do something that will help them on their journey in some small way. And I say that like with all humility, not as this sort of grandiose statement, but just like as an offering to them. And I found solace in that because I think that that's the emptiness of grief, that feeling of like you've got this love with nowhere to go. I read that quote somewhere, like grief is just like love with nowhere to go. And that really is just so true. So feeling like I could direct it was helpful and healing to me.
Do you feel almost in a way that you are still directing it? Or, yeah.
Yeah, certainly. I think that, I guess I might just also just mention that my dad had had Alzheimer's for about 8 years. And so, 'cause people might be like, she seems fine. So my dad had been like declining, for many years. And he was at this stage of life where things were about to become, he was going to lose more and more and more freedom and independence. And he was a very independent guy who loved life and loved his freedom and his independence. And so his life was sort of on this cusp of changing dramatically. And that was going to be very difficult for him. So I guess I just want to sort of name that because although this cancer diagnosis was very sudden and it was all very fast and it was a lot to process and digest. And it's so sad and heartbreaking. I lost my dad a long time ago. And I trusted that this was a blessing in disguise and that he was able to transition with more dignity and peace this way. And that's very personal to share, but I just, I don't think my dad would mind me sharing that because I hope it's an offering. I hope it's something that might help someone else. But I guess I just wanted to mention it because I started grieving the loss of my dad 8 years ago, 10 years ago. So I've had time to process it. And it's that sort of like, I've heard this term ambiguous grief of like, that happens to people when someone goes missing at sea and they never find the body. So they have this loss, but they have no tangible proof of it, right? And I had the opposite with my dad, where it was like he was here, but he was there was a part of him that was gone and leaving. So it's that, so I've been dancing with that for a really long time. So if I seem like chipper about it, I feel like I've had the benefit of time to process a lot. And then in terms of like, is it still an offering? I find that another thing that brings me some solace with both my brother and my dad is like feeling an ongoing connection to them. So, and that happens in a number of ways. Like one of the ways I think is looking for signs from them. So, asking for a sign, like naming the sign that you want from them, and then looking for, finding it. So for my little brother, it's feathers. That's one of my signs from him. And I've had just so many incredible experiences of that sign, of having that sign. And, it's, I think that is a lovely way to still feel connected. But also, it's like on a more tangible level, is like how I live my life. I want to take the legacy of what both of those beautiful, creative, magnetic, dynamic men had to offer. And I want to honor them by living my life with as much courage and creativity and generosity as I can. So I feel that their passion and their sense of purpose in life is now sort of tucked into the folds of my heart, and I carry them with me in my life and in my work.
You're doing a pretty amazing job.
Generous of you to say. I'm just an ins aspiring beam of light, Jackie.
Yes, I know. Indeed you are, Caitlin. Indeed you are. Signs. We were talking about signs before we hit record. And I shared with you one of my signs. Would you share with us one of your signs?
Yeah, so like from my brother, or yeah. Well, feathers are the main sign from my brother. And it's really neat because now all of my family and friends of my brother Pete's, they send me photos of, the feathers they find and like all of the
I
ways that feathers show up in their lives. So it's become this sort of group sign, which is super,
that.
it's super lovely because I think that we want to keep the memory of our loved ones alive. And so having those ways of like continuing to talk about them is, it's lovely. It's very, of course it's just like doesn't hold a candle to actually having them here, but it's a nice way to keep connect, keep that connection going. So I'll tell you one story about the feathers. So I mean in the days after my brother died, I was in a state of shock, and maybe 2 days after he passed, one of my best friends came over and she brought food, which by the way is like the best thing you can do for someone who's grieving. She brought all this food, and then she took me for a walk around my neighborhood. Just I hadn't been out of the house, so she took me for a walk, and I told her, oh, I had asked for feathers from my loved ones who have passed on, and I had done that like months before he passed away. I said, listen to this episode of the Goop podcast with the author of that book, Signs. I don't know if anybody's read that, but she basically said, you want to communicate with loved ones who have passed on, you need to tell them what the sign is. Like, what's the language? Name the language. I said, okay, I'll do feathers, maybe saw a feather here and there, nothing. Went for this walk with my friend. I must have picked up 26 feathers. And I'm like bending over and I'm picking up the feathers and I'm crying. I'm going, it's just feathers, feathers. And she's like, yeah, okay. She's the GP. So she's like very like she's like the loveliest human, but she's not a like she's a woman of science, and but also like very, she's spiritual. I would say she's spiritual, but so that was like the first experience. But then it was just like thing after thing after thing, and one of the most like sort of like ones where you go, okay, I'm not making this up, was my kids. We took my husband and I took the kids to this cute little lighthouse up in at Fingal Head, and it's the cutest little lighthouse you've ever seen. So I'm trying to get the kids in front of this lighthouse, and I'm trying to take a photo, which like trying to take a photo of three children like under eight at the same time being still is like a not gonna happen. So I'm trying to manage them, and this beautiful woman comes up, this Aboriginal woman, and she's watching me and laughing, and she's, we start chatting, and she goes, "Look, they're so cute," and she points at one of my kids and says, she's the feather collector. And I just looked at her and started crying. And I said, they're from my brother. And she goes, yeah, he's here. And so she describes my brother. She says he's here, and she gives me a message from him. And then we have this whole heart to heart in the middle of this path, Finglehead. And then she unclips, she had those like peeper keepers that hold your sunglasses on, and she unclips an emu feather from her peeper keeper and gives it to me, and then gives one to each of my children. And I mean, there was like more, in it, but like that's the gist of it. And it was just the most like beautiful experience, and I will never stop thanking her for that act of generosity, right? Like she was clearly tuned in to the other side, and like you have to be a very generous soul to be willing to like be the conduit for that, and to just approach someone and offer that is so, so generous. But yeah, so that's one where you're like, okay, like you can't explain that away logically, Right?
Put that feather in your pocket, science.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's like life is magic. It
You
just
got to be
is.
open to it, don't you?
Yeah. And I think, like, certainly, okay, like we could be cynical and, you know, but that kind of takes the fun out of it, doesn't it?
Totally.
I just think that there's an aspect of life that is inherently mysterious and unfigureoutable. And that is okay.
Yes.
And
there's magic in that.
There's magic in that. There's fear in that because
totally.
We want to control it and we want to know it and we want to understand it. But I think that that is like, that is the magic, the mystery. And it's that curiosity, bringing that creative, curious spirit and going, ooh, what will I uncover next? Like, what is this? I don't think anybody has the answers,
No.
You know, fully laid out. Like, there are pathways, certainly, you know, I deeply respect and appreciate the pathways laid out by the, you know, Tantra and yoga and Ayurveda. And I think that those offer incredible tools. So certainly there are pathways, but there's mystery there.
Yes. Embrace the mystery. The Hope Dealer. How should we use this? Read it. What's the best way?
Well, as I mentioned before, the concept for it was originally for it to be I didn't mention this part, but it was originally to be a deck of cards that you would pull the card and then consult the book for the full message. And it shape-shifted and became a book where you could interact with it in the same way. So how you can interact with it is you could just sort of intuitively flip to a page and get a message for that moment or that day, or you could ask a question, right? So tuning into your own sort of like inner guidance about a question or something that you're working with and open a page that way. And it's really designed to be an interactive tool. And so I think ideally, if you meditated before and then asked the question and then maybe journaled after, if there was something to respond to in that, or something that stuck with you, I think journaling is a really amazing way of bringing the lessons from our, you know, meditation cushion or whatever into our lives. So I think that that's the way that it can be done, but you can really use it any way. You could put it on your nightstand and read a message before bed or when you wake up in the morning, or put it on your coffee table and read a message while you drink your morning beverage. Or you could read it front to back. So there's really no wrong way, but I will also mention that the audiobook is set up so that each message is its own track, so that you can use it in the same way where you can sort of intuitively just like pick a track, let your sort of finger lead you to the right track for the day and listen to it in that way as well. But then because Jackie, you know, I love the practical tools. I've got a suite of companion practices in my app, which is called Heavily Meditated. So you can access those for free, and they are a variety of different things. So there's a walking meditation, there's some guided meditations, there's meditation and journaling practices, and there's yoga nidra, of course. And so they really are all around some of the main themes in the book. So alchemizing self-doubt, or trusting and rest, or, you know, really tapping into your future self. So there's all these different themes that are offered in these practices that have been designed to really help you bring these messages into life in a meaningful way. So that's the sort of suite of goodies.
Yeah, and goodies they are. And it is a beautiful way of introducing really healthy, meaningful rituals into your life if you're stuck on where to start.
Thank
And
you.
I have to say, when I first received it, I did the whole flick and just open, and mine came open to follow the feels, which is so interesting because this is another thing for me this year that I've really been trying to tune into is my intuition, my gut, and also the joy and following all of those things that make me feel really good and satisfying. And so I thought that was such a beautiful way to start. But then of course, I mean, I love it so much. I did actually just go from read it from front to back and just
Did you?
read all of
That
it. But I love it so much. Caitlin, you are magic. This book is magic. Love
was
everything about what you do. If people want to find out more about you and your courses and your meditation app and all of the amazing things you have on offer, how can they do that?
Thank you. My website is caitlincady.com. So it's CADY, caitlincady.com. And so you'll find lots of resources there, information about both of my books and a link to the app, as well as some free resources. So there's a free morning ritual guide that you can download. And there's also a Ujjayi breathing tutorial. So if you're interested in learning a very simple technique to soothe the nervous system, you can download this free kit as at the website as well. And then yeah, the website or the excuse me, the app is Heavily Meditated, and that's available for iPhone and Android. And I'm also over on Instagram at Caitlin Katie. So would love to connect if you listen to the episode and have something that resonates. Like always love to hear from kind folks, and also happy to answer questions that come up.
Amazing. And I have to say, you mentioned earlier, the Breathe Well course, and part of that you do, we did do the Ujjayi breath. And I have to say, it was one that really, I really love doing. And so I can highly recommend that one for sure. I feel like it's an easier one, especially if you're feeling kind of a bit strung up. It's a nice one that's not too, what would you say? It's not too confronting to sit with. Yeah.
Well said. Yeah, it's very approachable and yet very effective. And it's I think it's often sort of like glossed over, or people have sort of a basic understanding of what it is. But it really is such a powerful tool. And I think the reason it's glossed over sometimes is that people either think they know what it is, or they think that it's not like fancy enough. So but it's actually super powerful and such an awesome one. It's I reach for it often, and it's easy to learn how to do. And like you said, it's not sort of confronting. So it's a great one to have in the toolkit for sure. So thanks for that. Thumbs up, lady.
Thank you. One last question to
Yeah.
finish us off. Creating meaning in our lives when we feel stuck or stagnant or things are a little mundane, how can we add something into our routine or change things up or be more spontaneous? How can we do something to, I guess, create that little bit of spark or magic again?
Yeah. I think it's such a great question. What has worked well for me is to go back to the things that I know have worked for me in the past. So often it's the things that we've sort of slowly over time abandoned. You know, it's like we've dropped one thing and then we've dropped and we've left this sort of like trail of good things behind us. So sometimes we need to turn around and walk back down the path that we just came and pick up those tools that we already know work for us. So for me, meditation is like a non-negotiable. So I'm always doing that. But there are other things that, journaling, sometimes I'm like, oh, life is full and I'm not journaling as much. And I pick that back up. Or tapping is something that I find really helpful. So I pick that back up. A gratitude ritual, I pick that back up. Reading something inspiring after I meditate, I pick that back up. Whatever it is, time spent in nature. Time spent just drinking your cup of tea and staring out into space without doing anything, that's valuable. All of those, whatever they are, and maybe that list might inspire you, but maybe there are already tools that have worked for you in the past that you can just return to and pick back up and put in your basket again. But I think that it is about just doing your day with more intention, like bringing those things back into your day and making space for meaning and inspiration to come through, right? So if you are waking up and just like picking up your phone and then reading the news and checking your email and scrolling Instagram, and then you drive to work and you listen to the radio or podcast on the way to the work, and then you get to the office and you type email, like da 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 da. You're just like filling all that space and not allowing any space for anything else to come through. So I always say, like, if you want inspiration needs to be able to find you. And it's not going to find you while you're sitting on the couch watching the Kardashians taking a tub of Ben and Jerry's to the dome. Sorry. There's nothing wrong with that. That's okay, but
Exactly. There's
like
time and space for that,
there's time
place
and
for that.
space for that. No judgment. But if it's inspiration and meaning that you're looking for, you're going to need to reach for other tools.
Absolutely.
Thank
Okay, then. I love it. You, my friend, are such a gift. Thank you so much for chatting with me. It's been awesome.
absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for having me back. I always love our chats.
That was Caitlin Cady, meditation teacher, writer, author, and all-round extraordinary human being. You can get her book, The Hope Dealer, from any good bookstore. In fact, it is such an incredible gift. The book is beautiful. So if you know someone who needs a bit of inspiration in their life and loves a beautiful, aesthetically pleasing book, then this one is definitely for them. Or if that person is you, make sure you check it out. It is absolutely gorgeous and is the right dose of information and practical application too. So check it out. As always, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you loved this episode, share it with your friends, subscribe or leave a review because all of that counts for this little podcast going on strong. Again, thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you. Have the best day, week, month, and year. Stay awesome. We'll catch you next time.